Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yo. Hey, are you familiar with this phrase, yoked? I had to look it up on Urban Dictionary. It means swole and muscular.
Yeah. I like that you said it means swole. So that's Justin Robert Young.
Yeah, but you didn't know yoked?
Nope. I hadn't seen it before for whatever reason.
That's also a thing with the shirts. If you're taking the sleeves off of shirts, you're yoking a shirt.
Yoking a shirt as a verb.
Yeah.
Mr. Bryce Castillo, where do you sit on this?
I guess I'm not super surprised that you got swole or that you knew swole already, but it's okay.
Well, yeah. Swole's been around 10 years. I just, for whatever reason, nobody happened to have used the word yoked before.
Brian wasn't moving in the yoked circle.
That's right. Hey, man, we live in an increasingly splintered microculture society.
Okay, so now what was the – can you tell whatever the context was for someone saying the word yoked?
Oh, I was responding to YouTube comments and somebody on the most recent video. We've had a couple of really popular Scam Nation videos recently, and so a lot of people who haven't seen videos for a while are having them show up in their feed, and you can tell people who it's been a minute because they either say, whoa, you got fat, or they say, whoa, you got muscular. And so in this case, somebody said, you got yoked, and I'm like, compliment or no? And so I had to look it up.
Yeah. What, eggs? Like egg creams? What?
Yeah, that's our next big video. That's our big algorithmic video, is we have to now throw eggs at you.
Prime Rushwood gets yoked.
Well, now who else is yoked?
Mr. Thanos. Bryce Castillo? Oh, Thanos.
No, I already got it.
Oh, there we go.
Thanos, yeah.
All right, is this our official announcement that from here on out we will be spoiling Endgame, or do we want to give our...
We'll tell you the plan. We're going to start with Endgame. We're going to try to keep Endgame talk all in the Endgame spoiling section, and then we're going to talk Game of Thrones. So we'll try to keep Game of Thrones talk isolated there.
Specifically 803, the big battle, is there a name for the battle?
Battle of Winterfell?
Long Night.
Yeah, the Battle of Winterfell.
The Battle for Ratings. Night.
Yeah, there you go. The big beefy 803. So yeah, we'll start with Endgame, right?
There was a movie that came out this weekend. If you've been following along, we know comic stuff's not for everybody, and we know it's sort of a niche thing, comic book movies, etc., and Marvel, because not everybody grew up reading them, so not everybody's going to go see these movies. But they had a movie come out, and it was called The Avengers, the Endgame? What was it?
Adventures in a Game.
Endgame.
This is not, by the way, a lot of people were confused. They thought this was a sequel to the Ralph Fiennes, Uma Thurman movie from The Avengers. That's different. That was a totally different British thing. Different, guys. I know some people were probably upset because they were confused.
Can we just jump in?
Yeah, let's jump in.
It's good. It's a good movie. It's a good movie. It's a good project.
The movie's good, folks.
It's the stomach-clenching end to an 11-year journey. It is something that an 8th-grade Brian never in his wildest dreams could be even attempted, much less landed with the strength and quality that it did. It is amazing beyond words.
It did a thing that I was not expecting. I guess is kind of repetitive by the definition of what I'm about to say, but it surprised me. Like, I did not expect the movie to be what it was. I was continually delighted by the moments that it gave us. I think that there are some quibbles that you can kind of have from a meta level about it. But in general, I can't imagine a movie... If you're going to make the decision that this is going to be a celebration, remembrance, and a one last dance with this cast of characters, then they went all in on it. Like, it was exactly what you want, down to the fact that the characters that we're going to stay around with continue to have interesting things coming out of it. The characters that aren't got heroic send-offs.
I really liked it. Let me make that very clear. I thought it was a fine, good movie. And the Russo brothers are my favorite team. And the writers, Marcus and I forget the Feely. I think the guys who are writing these are doing a fantastic job. And the writers doing this. Walking into Infinity War, we're like, man, how are you going to handle this first half of this part? You know, you've got to do the first half of something and juggle all these threads, be able to manage all of this. And I loved Infinity War. Infinity War is one of my favorite. It's absolutely my favorite Avengers movie of all, you know, and it is by a major margin, because what they did, they showed, yes, you can do the things that people go, it's hard to do. So I loved Infinity War. But Infinity War is fantastic, eminently rewatchable. I liked Endgame. I enjoyed Endgame. I don't put it on the Infinity War level for me. There are parts of Endgame that to me were like, I'm going like, it's okay. I mean, if this were another Marvel movie, it'd be okay. But like, you know, when I'm watching the Thor story, I mean, it's funny. The first part we meet him, you know, we see what he's doing. It's like funny. And then when I'm like the Thor story and this, I'm like, this is dragging for me. You know, the shenanigans throughout time kind of thing followed a very familiar pattern, which sort of, that's where it didn't surprise me. And it kind of did like, well, everybody's going to meet somebody, there's themselves or somebody close to them. And we're going to have this sort of nostalgic sort of moment that's going to drag for me. Is it that happened? And so I was like, all right, okay, we have this scene. I'm going to go use the restroom because it's going to be this. I've seen this, you know, which I kind of like, you know, the Russo brothers and the team, writing team kind of have been great at bringing me stuff that felt different. But I mean, if you want the nostalgia, that's fine. But for me, there were parts that just really dragged, you know, but. The execution was wonderful, though. So
that, to me, is the meta element, is that ultimately Endgame, I've been comparing to Vitamin C's song Friends Forever. Like, it is this kind of graduation anthem for a decade of Marvel movies. And it's saccharine. It's overly sweet. It is certainly reliant on those ideas. So if you're Andrew Main and you're like, well, I would have liked something interesting and fresh, you're not going to get it. But if you are there to see Tony Stark, you know, have the conversation with his dad that he has never had before, if that's something that you revel in, which I was more into, then I could understand where it was certainly not a moment that I was like, oh my God, what a fresh and interesting complex thing.
But
it run me through the paces.
Well, let me clarify. When they went back to the first Avengers battle, the Battle of New York, I like that because there were stakes.
Yeah.
The outcomes changed, things happen, things like that. I like that because it was a thing. It changed the outcome of stuff. And I enjoyed that because it was like, oh, it's played out differently. It's kind of a fun riff on like Back to Future 2 kind of thing. But it was a real challenge, real stakes, all of that. I enjoyed that part. And that was formulaic, but there were consequences and there were outcomes that were different than you expected. The Tony Stark, you know, Howard Stark scenes were like, we need to go back here. We're going to go back here and it's not going to make a difference. We can have this scene. We could have just did like at the end of the movie, Cap's like, I'm going to go back, you know, and then like, yeah, we're back because everything happened the way we wanted it to happen. And no reason to tell you what happened, where they could have introduced complications. They did cool stuff with like, I loved how like, you know, they had the plan and then Thanos is so friggin' smart in every dimension. He's like, I think there's something going on and I'm going to F with you. And it was great. I love that part. So that I guess a part of it's like, so much was great. I'm like, it's good, but you know, I've seen your good material and I want more of that.
I think that we don't have the perspective that the vast majority of people will experience this in. It's weird to, we realized over on the Cord Killers podcast that it is a fundamentally different experience to watch a television show that has a long story arc as a binge session versus watching it week after week.
For sure.
Right. And even though we're only, what, 3-4 days into the release of this, we have to remember that we are the last of people who will be experiencing these movies as individual movies. If you think about it as where it is in the overall story, the pacing and everything changes. For example, as a movie, a bit weird that we start with 25 minutes of 9/11 recovery, you know, but as a second half of one movie, Infinity War, it makes a lot more sense. And to be honest, all of that opening stuff where they brought home the real world consequence, the destroyed psyche of planet Earth. I loved all of that, and I wanted more of that in Infinity War, because I found it really weird that Infinity War is like, yeah, so anyway, half the world died. End of movie. But I understand why they did that for their reasons. And if you pull out even farther and look at it as a 20, or I guess it would be what, roughly a 50 to 60 hour novel that we're experiencing, then yeah, do a victory lap, go see your dad, get a little wobbly on the logic of time travel and all that stuff. Also, I've softened on all strict interpretations of time travel stuff ever since I read more and more about the many worlds theory. I'm just like, and they sort of nod to that with Tilda Swinton talking about, like, that's great for your timeline, but what does that do to my timeline? And I was like, yeah, good point.
I'm with you, Brian. I in general was like, at the point that they introduced time travel, at the point that they're like, okay, well, we're going to go back and visit all these old characters that have died, we're going to go back and visit all these old moments, I kind of just gave myself over again. It was Friends Forever. Nobody thinks that Friends Forever is the greatest song ever. But, you know, if you remember that time it played during your high school graduation, you have fond memories of it. And that's ultimately where I was with Endgame. I very much agree with Andrew that I do think that Infinity War is a better movie. I think that it is a better and more complexly constructed movie. I think that there are parts of Endgame, and this is what really kind of surprised me, is that tonally, it, like, you know, saddles a 9/11 survivor support group next to I just peed my pants joke with Ant-Man trying to figure out, the time travel stuff. And you have some really wackety schmackety stuff with Thor and the newly merged Hulk. So there's a lot of, you know, jumping around that's there. I don't know if it is the most, you know, well-constructed movie. And I think that of all of Andrew's criticisms, I do agree with. They just didn't bother me because I was swept up in the moment.
I wasn't sitting there going, but like, Brian, your point about the beginning of the where the world, you know, was stuck. My issue was, like, I felt it was, and maybe I have to watch it again, although that's saying, I walked out of N84 ready to go watch it again. In this one, I'm like, maybe watch it at home, but I thought that world, to me, it felt inconsistent, because in one minute Ant-Man's walking through, you know, San Francisco from Planet of the Apes, you know, and it's just this devastation and stuff. And then we see the shot of the Statue of Liberty with all of these boats tied up around it. I'm like, oh, wow, this world's amazing. Then we're in like a fun diner and everything else is normal. And I'm like, I don't know what world. I mean, maybe it's like, oh, some things are back to normal. I'm like, yeah, but it kind of feels like the master wide shots show you this, but then we go in close for jokes and fun stuff. It's normal.
Well, I think that if you want to get into the weeds, there's plenty of weeds to get into on this. But I took all of that to be a nod to the fact that, oh, wait, this is like a low grade version of the story of The Stand. Like in The Stand, 99.9% of all humanity dies, but all their stuff is there. And it changes, you know, everything. Think about the economy and all that stuff. This is not a movie about the socioeconomic ramifications of losing 50% of your population. That is a very interesting story, but there are other stories that explore all of that. And
they
so
have a meeting like, let's talk about fiscal policy, guys. We've got to figure out
monetary supply. Let's talk about mass looting. Let's talk about, look, there's a billion really interesting stories of what happens to the survivors.
Big Avengers fanfare, a teletype intro, the Fed.
Well, by having that 5-year time jump, they kind of can smooth over a lot of those things, right?
That to me felt like the bottle that they're like, yeah, a lot of stuff happens and you're going to have a lot of questions. We're not answering any of them, but we're going to give a hint that a lot of stuff has gotten really that everybody's doing the best they can. And we're going to convey that with, there's half as many garbage peoples and there's a lot of garbage and we're figuring all this stuff. And if you want to talk about world breaking stuff, I wouldn't be so concerned with the beginning of the movie so much as the end, because that was a fascinating decision that they took away half the planet and then didn't bring them back. And then 5 years later, what happens when the population just doubles overnight, man?
Yeah. Oh, hey, by the way, big marriage goal to Hawkeye for keeping his wife's cell phone charged and the running plane for 5 years. That man, I'll tell you what, he stood by his woman. While he's out murdering cartels and Yakuza, he's just like, oh, shit. Is AT&T still set to auto pay?
His story was also another one. I'm like,
I thought that was the weakest. I was the least into Hawkeye's jam, although it was great to give us a quiet apocalypse moment at the beginning to watch a quiet 9/11 just as a standalone thing.
The intro came close to justifying all the time we spent in the farmhouse at Ultron.
Yeah.
finally that had some worth to me.
Especially because I remember, because that's the opening scene, thinking, well, oh man, he got lucky. None of his family died. This is a fun outdoorsy moment, and then you know they were Price all very like, lucky.
Oh, this is nice. That's,
but I mean, and so yeah, the other thing we were talking about this just a little bit earlier, but what I really enjoyed about Endgame is that it wasn't the same structure that all of these other Marvel movies have, which is just like, okay, we need to go get a thing. So we go to a set piece and we didn't quite get the thing. So now we got to chase the bad guy to another set piece. And we didn't punch him hard enough.
Things,
but it wasn't, I don't know. It didn't feel as like, as very neatly three act structured as the other movies are. Like, it was a lot of interplay and a lot of fun bits, that kind of made the 3 hours feel worth it.
I mean, and 3 hours, how about that magic trick? I can't think of another movie that 3 hours blows past that fast as this.
I mean, really, like, it was mostly kind of disorienting to me because I had no idea where we were in the story. Like, at the point that Thanos shows back up to the Avengers headquarters, I was like, oh, I guess this is our end. Like, because otherwise I had no idea what we were doing and where we were going. But then, you know, when it becomes time for the final battle, it becomes time for the final battle.
And yeah, I thought that was a great way to go to have that. I felt every minute of that 3 hours. I'll point that. Well, I'm just going to say that. It did not fly by for me. It was like, because I'm seeing like the time travel thing. I'm like, they just did that just so they could meet. There's no story here. all right, let's get the next thing. But that battle, the final battle, is great. That was a wonderful, delightful sort of, you know, hey, no, this is a big moment. We're gonna bring everybody together. I'm like, oh yeah, you did.
Yeah, no, that was the capo de capo like superhero team up of all time. You know, quite possibly never to be topped.
Yeah.
They definitely stuck that landing. Story. Can I tell you my favorite part about the movie, though, was when a certain character said, hey, don't expect me to see me in the rest of the movie.
And then you don't.
I almost jumped up out of my seat and started cheering.
Yes!
I like Captain Marvel much better in this movie than in her own movie, though.
It was great. You know, well, she showed up. She said like three things.
Well,
and she said, see you later, guys. Expect me in the final 10 minutes. And then she showed up. She did great in the final 10 minutes. Woo!
But at least it felt justified, right? She was like, hey, I'm doing the thing that you guys are all doing for Earth, but for 1,000 other planets.
But more importantly, I need you to know that I'm doing it because I'm very powerful. If that wasn't clear, hi, it's me, Captain Marvel. I'm very powerful. Sure. I'm so powerful. Oh, I'm sorry. Kill Thanos. I'll do that by myself, even though you all together couldn't, because I'm very powerful.
Yeah. I will say that chopping his head off thing definitely got me. Like, I was definitely like, well, I have no idea where the hell this is going now.
Yeah, it at the beginning.
Reality Stone, they're gonna walk away and he's gonna go back to making his little creamy broth. And like,
their journey ends. Now I'm gonna go back. Try this boulabaisse. Oh, I killed my friends.
That was, in fact, thematically, I wouldn't be surprised. How many Avengers were there for it. I wonder if thematically they made sure it was six or something, so it would be super on the nose that it's a SEAL Team Six moment. Like,
Nebula, Captain Marvel, Thor,
and
let's just say for sake of discussion, we had a 9/11, and then we had they got Osama bin Laden, and that moment of the hollow Pyrrhic victory was what I loved that they did 5 years later. And it's like, despite having been the guy who got Thanos, just cutting to broken, destroyed Lebowski Thor was great. It was, I really dug all that.
Yeah, you know, the Thor stuff I really liked, because again, it was a surprise. It was an interesting wrinkle for him. They obviously want to continue to take that character into more Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor Ragnarok direction. So it felt true to me there. I do think that I never fully bought where I think they ultimately wanted that character. Like, they wanted Thor to be like mental breakdown, right? And it never quite got there for me. But then again, in a movie with so many emotionally resonant moments, like that one misfiring didn't really kill me.
There is a shorthand in storytelling that I think a lot of stuff was not said or sold correctly or to my satisfaction in Captain Marvel, because it didn't need to be, because the idea being that women don't need to be told certain things because they've lived life as a female. I felt that with the Thor stuff very strongly. As somebody who went to California and dropped everything and white-knuckled for a year of production and then came back broken and has since packed on a couple stone, it spoke to me not in like a huge important way, but it's like they didn't need to oversell or explain all of that. Like, I know... I know for me that it's I relate.
In the cabin, I think, you know, you got it. Really, it was more the moment when he's back in Valhalla and he's like they're trying to, like, he flakes out and then winds up accidentally seeing his mom and everything, where it's like, and it's not even really like a thing with the acting or the writing necessarily. I guess maybe it's a little bit with the writing, but he never shifted, like. You never saw the clown kind of behind the makeup. And as soon as you introduce him as a comedic character, dramatically, if he's flaking out, he can either flake out because he's a wacky guy, or he can flake out because his hands are shaking and he has just gone into shock. Right. And he feels numbness in his limbs. And it never really turned that cylinder for me.
Side note, can we talk about what a jerk move it was for him to steal alternate dimension Thor's hammer?
I loved all that. Right?
Hey, man, many worlds.
Defenseless to protect the realms.
I mean, look.
He can get another hammer.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, yeah, he'll go see Tyrion and he'll forge him a new one. Whatevs. Like, I went through it. He can too.
Because it wasn't like a totally big deal.
Those fractured timelines won't exist, right?
Yeah, they'll exist.
But on their own timelines. With the mini worlds theory,
like, timeline, Thor there does not have a hammer.
Yeah.
You're right. No, because he didn't return the hammer like they returned.
No.
Yes, he did. Captain took the hammer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Cap took the hammer.
Cap took the hammer.
Captain returned everything back, the stones and the hammer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so that does tie that up.
I'm glad. That's what I love about the writers for this, who wrote this, was they're very good at those little details. The, hey, wait, no, it's, oh, okay, sorry, my bad. Okay. Thor was still a jerk for taking it in the first place, though. You
know? Captain America lifting Mjolnir was the biggest.
Oh, no, it was great. Yeah, right, was, that time code.
Was the biggest moment. I mean,
In the entire MCU, I felt that
the biggest single character moment, like everyone kind of coming in at the beginning of the battle, was like the big thing for me. But him getting the hammer and wailing on the shield and wailing on Thanos, that was great. That was one of like two moments in the movie that got like a whoop out of the audience.
Yeah,
can we have a brief sidebar on nerd whooping? Where are we at on nerd whooping? Because I'm ready to petition the Alamo Draft House to add it to the list of things that you are should not be allowed to do.
That's fine.
Really?
Why? What? Also, no clapping. No expressions of joy. Think,
clapping during...
Don't smile, because I might offend the person next to you.
Well, I just, yeah, I don't know. It gets and
also no if you can no muster the courage, try to avoid gasps as well. Like, there's going to be some surprises. We all know there's going to be surprises.
Are
you don't need to convey that you're surprised.
You've never gotten annoyed by excessive nerd whooping.
I mean, I did not during the movie, but during of all things, the special edition release of Star Wars: A New Hope. I remember
with the audience laugh track.
The audience behind me was all like, oh my God, when I see Chewbacca, I'm going to yell this. I'm going to lie to that. And I was that guy. And I was like, or hey, why don't we just watch the movie? Doesn't have to be
I hate, like, I know what that is. That drives me nuts. That's like, I'm going to show you all that I know it.
Is that, you know, that, and there was a guy who, much like there's like a trope in golf that people just yell, get in the hole as the ball is like traveling to the pin. There was just a dude who just had his catchphrase of like, say it. Whenever he knew that there was like a big catchphrase or a callback or something, he would just say loudly. He would just go, say it. And I'm just like,
did you raise an order card?
That
does suck. That guy sucks.
For the record, all of this high-roading is coming from the guy who shouted out to dead silence in the theater at the premiere of Star Wars, impersonating Mr. Plinkett during the previews of Star Trek. He goes, that's not Star Wars.
That's a preview. Previews.
You were
the comedian, so proud of your material that you gave an unwarranted, unlicensed performance and stepped in front
laugh.
Of the stage.
I got a good laugh out of that. I
the other big whoop moment for the theater that I was in was at the Women of Marvel scene.
Okay.
Which... seemed to be the setup for a really good sequence, and then they immediately fell on their collective faces, which I thought kind of undersold the power of doing a big hoorah women moment.
I think that was
maybe an unfortunate way to send that.
I viewed that as, you know, they were uniting as everybody was, and everybody took two steps forward and then had to kind of rugby pitch it to the next person, and that was part of it.
Regardless, that brief pop-up ad was artless and crass, did not belong in the movie, and I felt
bad for.
For what?
All Marvel. Women Marvel.
I mean, it was right. Like it was
Papa bad for women.
Yeah,
women?
Yes. No. I was sitting. Bonnie and I were completely lost in the spell of this story. My daughter Penny was there for it. We were so in the moment, tears streaming, excitement, joy. You know that moment where all the heroes show up, and then without any justification. Was essentially this 10-second vignette that whose message was women are great, am I right? And it's like it was so obviously shoehorned in and didn't belong there. I felt from my wife, it was the one moment that we did not hold hands during that movie. We were completely bonded.
That's how upset with women Brian was.
No. It wasn't me who let go. Like, I felt Bonnie's hand tense, her fingers extend, and I felt her draw back, cross her arms, and radiate grossness with that stuff. It was it did not belong in the movie. And it did not add anything, and I did not like it.
It certainly takes you out of a bit. You're like, well, this is convenient, and I'm like, I get it, but I'm like, man, I sat through another movie I won't mention that was 2 hours of that. and really, really bad writing in my opinion.
I was fine with the minute and a half sequence. Although, look, you're absolutely right, Brian. It was a gigantic billboard of like, oh, they're all here. Like they all gathered at I don't know.
It was a blemish on what to me was otherwise a fairly perfect roller coaster.
But that's the thing though, is that to me, that's part of the fact that they're just hitting these nostalgia moments. And the movie is wrapped around the moments. The movie is wrapped around whether or not you care about the fractured father-son relationship of Tony and Howard Stark, whether you care about the female empowerment elements that happen through Ant-Man and the Wasp and Captain Marvel, whether or not you care about the comedy of Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor Ragnarok. That we went through the tour. It's a small world of Marvel themes and moments, and that's one of them. And it might be people's favorites. It might be other people's, it might stick out like a sore thumb. But I would say that there's probably one moment for all of them. There's one moment amongst all the things that they did, be it the intellectual world building meeting of the minds of the Ancient One and Bruce Banner, or the father son stuff that felt off to somebody for some reason.
I would say, like, my issue with that moment is not cool. They all happen to be there. Cool. Was it then that kind of winked, hey, what's special about this? And it's like, well, you know, you kind of deflated it. You kind of let us arrive at, like, man, these are amazing kick-ass heroes. And like, oh, wait. Oh,
yeah. Man,
that's awesome. You're like, oh, like, yeah, no, look at us. Look what's going on. It's like, another Disney movie. There was what was it in Solo? Like, guess who the villain is? It's a woman. Well, yeah, we live in a very complex world now where women can play complex characters. This is a thing we do now. And that you're patting yourself on the back makes me feel like you're behind the times.
Well, that's what it read as to me. Like, just like that reveal, like, a girl, is your mind blown? You never knew a girl could be a villain. And that's what this felt like. And it especially felt if your goal was, let's say your stated goal is to make people understand that women are powerful and can be powerful. Great. Congratulations. You gave me 2.5 hours of that in the form of Black Widow being one of the best, awesomest characters in the whole freaking thing. You did it with all of the strong female characters that you have. But then they put a hat on a hat, and they shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, they failed immediately.
It
will never bug me that they all completely fumbled and Iron Man and Captain America had to save the day again.
Well, Bryce, hate to be the one to say it, that was wrong too.
What?
Oh, no, it's just
okay.
I was excited because, like, we had, like, we see at the very, I mean, one, the very beginning, the Tony Stark's daughter. And first I'm like, oh, this is a time travel story. This is bad because he's going to lose his daughter. But when we see the rescue, you know, the rescue Iron, I'm like, oh, cool. We're going to get, like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow's character, Pepper Potts, doing a lot more of this and kind of thing. And she seemed strangely okay with Tony Stark dying at the end, though, by the way. It was kind of like she'd been expecting this kind of thing. Like, it's okay, Tony. If I'm honest with you, I thought I was going to find you in your shop slumped over your workbench a long time ago.
Let's be honest. We were living on borrowed time.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite moments was – traditionally when you do a time travel fix because what we were told is like, oh, the secret is speculation was, oh, the soul stone's still out there. So-and-so the soul stone, we're going to all gather together and wish around the soul stone and bring him back or something like that. And instead, like, no, none of that's happening. The stones are definitely gone forever. It's like, well, crap, what do we do? And then they just wallow in the misery of, like, well, that 5 years later was an awesome moment to just sweep aside any theories you had cooking on the back burner and be like, nope, we're just going to live as people recovering with grief. And then, okay, so we bring time travel back, but it's not to go back and fix anything. It's just to, as they say, time heist, to steal the ingredients so time that heist. We could fix it over here. Like, I dug the hell out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great way to get into the whole, you know, we can't fix our own past, you know, that we can't fix our own. That was a great, great solution. You know, it was a great, because otherwise it's like, you know, but then they had that discussion. Why not kill baby Thanos?
Two things I caught the second viewing, but didn't see the first. Number one, very sly that in the middle of the chaos, guess who's definitely back to being alive in the MCU and has a Tesseract?
Oh, Loki.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, after...
Does the Tesseract give him the power to time travel?
No,
though?
No, but he's alive because he's got a Tesseract in
that dimension.
Yeah, and although don't they have a Loki series coming?
Well, they do, but they also have a Black Widow series coming.
The Black Widow movie, they're supposed to take place before these events,
right?
But
as
soon as Loki picks up the Tesseract, I'm like, well, that's how they're bringing him back.
Yeah. Well, and just in the chaos, I didn't really note that the first time through because I was more focused on the problem of the Infinity Stone not being available. Second of all, what was it? It was it's at the end. Give me a second to just remember this.
Tangent moment on that. Captain America versus Captain America was a very fun fight. That was very cool.
That was a fun fight.
Get into who's going to fight who, but like Captain fighting Captain was really good.
I did not notice the first time, but did the second, is when Tom Holland, Spider-Man, sees his buddy at school, I'm like, it's 5 years. Why are they still in high school? And then I realized the entire cast, the next movie, it's got to be that all of their friends were dusted and they happen. There's got to be some moment where like, oh my God, we're 5 years behind all of our friends.
Some of them will be. Yeah.
I guess some of them could age.
We don't know when Far From Home takes place.
It's supposed to be right after.
It's supposed to be right after, right especially after. Because they're calling it the official end of the phase three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but initially I thought that they were being cagey on it. So unless there's been another announcement, but I hope I had the exact same hope from coming out of that like that's going to be a wrinkle to this fairly grounded high school story that we began with in the first Spider-Man.
That it's like, oh my God, we were all dead, and now here we are, but now we're way behind. So and so's already working at Google.
Like yeah. He goes home and it's like Aunt May's turned his room into like, you know, her little art pottery barn studio.
Yeah, I guarantee you there's definitely a scene of that. I 100% guarantee you.
Yeah. I think that, you know, like the Loki thing was cool. I'm like, okay, cool. It's a way to bring him back in there. And the little things they that are planted, you know, are cool. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I'm not like, the MCU, like I've looked at the slate coming up and, you know, I'm super stoked about Spider-Man. But after that, it's like, okay.
They haven't talked too much about the next films. I mean, we know, I guess there have been talks about like the Black Widow thing, but how extensive have they announced this phase four?
Well, we know like next year is supposed to be Black Widow, Eternals. Mm-hmm. And then we're doing, there's a Black Panther 2. There's going to be a Doctor Strange 2 Guardians 3. There's Shang-Chi or whatever. I forget what that one is. That's another one that's in development. We're looking at the slate here. Spider-Man.
Black Widow.
Eternals.
Which is, Doctor Strange 2. Black Panther 2, 2021. Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi, yep.
Guardians 3, of course. And then Disney Plus stuff. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The WandaVision thing. The Loki thing. And a Hawkeye thing, which is about his daughter.
Can we explore just real quick? I think they did a really smart thing of ending both Captain America's story and Iron Man's story in two different ways. Iron
what
Man.
What do you end? Captain America, Steve Rogers, is going to announce he's running for president in 2020.
He did. He looked a lot like Biden.
You know he could do it, too. You know he could be.
Oh, my God. No, are you kidding? Dude, he crushed. He'd be the new Eisenhower.
Four more terms.
Is America ready for a 112-year-old president?
Wow. Well, and but what's great about the way they landed it is I figure we're going to see some kind of we're going to continue to see Tony Stark and Steve Rogers. It'll be Steve Rogers. At some point, we're going to see a Marvel movie set in the 1960s or something. Fingers crossed, please let it be Fantastic Four and let it be good. Or maybe a Doom movie. That would be amazing. And then, but because we know that he no longer has that gap, we can go to, you know, a de-aged or whatever. Find it. Like, he can be 58 years old Steve Rogers at the right moment in there. So you can have him be age appropriate if the movie takes place at the right time.
I guess you could, though. His whole thing was to kind of have a vacation.
Well, that's exactly it.
He's got except for that one wild weekend.
Exactly. Like, hey guys, you know I'm out of the game, but good luck. Oh wait, I guess I'm showing up to save your butts. Bye. It's I'm going back to my quiet life.
No, they can save Captain America for any kind of the movie that takes place in the past, if they want to. They have that tool in their toolbox, should they need to have it. And then,
well, they can have Tony Stark pop in from another dimension.
Well, that won't happen. I think future movies, if we ever
Robert
see Steve
Downey
Rogers,
Jr. is too expensive for that.
No. I think he'll do voice work and be DH, because I'm certain that at some point they'll be like, oh, it's me. You're like, yeah, I couldn't resist helping you guys out, so I made this digital avatar of myself. I'm still as snarky as ever, but
I'm saying, if we're inventing reasons to bring Chris Evans back in, who kind of wanted to move on, I'm sure RDJ, they wanted to bring him back. I'm like you can, you know.
Right.
Everything's on a table.
They can figure it out. As soon as they showed him doing the final, like they made such a big deal about him recording messages and playing back messages, I kind of just like half assumed like that we're going to be getting Tony Stark Force Ghost.
I was thinking he'd be the voice of like Tom Holland Spider-Man suit or something, you know. Like, hey, kid, let me give you some advice. Yeah. I knew this was going to happen. And so I saw this Michael Keaton movie years ago and decided it.
we're happy with those send-offs. We're at peace with Iron Man and Captain America being gone. Because part of me thinks, like, man, I know those actors have whatever they want to do and whether that they want to be. I think Robert Downey Jr. seemed a lot more comfortable being defined by Tony Stark than Chris Evans was being defined by Steve Rogers and Captain America. But man, if they announced another Iron Man movie and another Captain America movie tomorrow with those guys in it, I'd be super pumped to go see it.
Give them 10 or 15 years to cool off and do their indie films or whatever. And then we could get some version of Old Man Logan only with Captain America and Iron Man. That'd be amazing.
Iron Man with a walker.
Yeah. I'd be so in on that.
I enjoyed going back earlier. I enjoyed the Steve Rogers fight. You know, the Steve Rogers 5-6 years later with the older Steve Rogers swearing and stuff. Yeah. And that was a great touch, because, like, you know, did the Gemini Man trailer play before?
I saw it in front of mine. Yeah,
I didn't. I don't know anything about it.
No, they were really weird. Considering this is like the biggest movie of all time, like. The Alamo played two documentary trailers, one for a couple that has a farm.
They just have a farm. It's just that we have a farm. Oh, no. It's hard to have a farm.
Another one about the first women to sail around the world in a competitive race. And I'm like, is this me going to see a random indie movie in like 1996? Like,
we don't have a new Toy Story trailer we can show.
I know. Yeah, it was like Hobbs and Shaw and then like The Power of Women at Sea and Look, We Own a Farm.
The Gemini Man trailer did play in front of mine.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the plot. It's, you know, you watch the plot, like, I think I watched the trailer, like, I think I got the movie. I think you gave me the whole movie, you know. Like, this assassin trying to kill me matches every single move. He's too good. It's like, you know, it's because he's you. He's a clone, or you're the clone of him. It's like, I guess they're going to meet up. Oh, now they just met up. You know, like, now we got to figure out what's going on. Like, all right, we're going to figure out what's going on. Like, we figure out it's this guy who did it. Like, okay, like, I'm sure there's more to it. But I'm like, yeah, I think I got the movie. Okay.
It's worth noting that.
By the way, you know who wrote Gemini Man?
Well, there are like three writers. Benioff was one of the writers.
Okay.
We'll take that as a yes.
So, yes, I do know.
Okay, cool.
Well, I'm saying it's like
doing the show.
My point is just as you go, like, well, he's one of three. I don't know that he write the version we saw.
I know, but that can come after I say, oh, isn't it funny? The Game of Thrones guy. And then you can what's more interesting is that he's one of three writers.
You were definitely given an option to alley-oop, but instead you stuffed him.
The reason I cut that short is often we go, oh, so-and-so wrote this. Like, No, they wrote part of it. We don't know who wrote it. And I'm trying to stop out this madness, Justin. I'm trying to stop it out.
Yeah, Justin, stop the madness.
And if we have to stop the flow of the show to do it, so be it. But you guys can keep the flow of money coming to us if you head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. If you enjoy our conversations, just a buck an episode. That's all we're asking for, man. You get your own RSS feed, and you make us feel proud to keep on showing up every single week in your feed.
Can I say one last endgame thing?
Sure.
This I knew that this was a thing going into the movie, and apparently I misread it in the movie and liked it because I misread it. Apparently, I don't remember which Russo brother it is, but portraying quote grieving man in the counseling session as the like gay character.
Yeah,
I definitely thought that was supposed to be Hulk. Because
it did look,
a little like Mark similar Ruffalo.
So that's why I was like, why would you cast somebody who looks that close like to Mark Ruffalo?
Right.
So that was one of the directors.
That was one of the Russos, right?
Oh, that's great.
I liked it better thinking it was Hulk.
I did
thinking
too.
That there was character development instead of just like unnamed random. I don't know.
I totally wouldn't have minded.
I think I throw that in the same bucket with Andrew's complaints about the world building of the 5 years later thing, where there was just a lot of random haphazard stuff just kind of thrown out there because ultimately this isn't The Leftovers. This is a time travel movie.
One of the Russo brothers is playing a part. And he's like doing this scene. That's a very poignant scene. It's kind of a little Kevin Smithy kind of it's a little awkward thing to put in here.
Luckily for me, none of it read as really awkward. I was really buying into the grief and that moment and we didn't even talk about it.
Just one more moment on that is that I did appreciate the symbolism of now he's running the grief counseling session like Falcon was running it during the war, but now it's for now everybody's been through the war, and so he's taking anybody who wants to come and talk about it. So
Professor Hulk, I lit up like a goddamn Christmas tree the second I saw him, and that interaction, like that moment, like how everyone at this table has lived that moment where somebody is a fan of one of us and we're next to one of our friends and he has to explain and oh my god, that awkward interaction was amazing.
Not to mention Captain America's right there.
Yeah,
he's not even involved in. I don't know.
Oh,
maybe he's got a secret identity still.
I love they did that. It was a little spoiled though, because I was going for my walk and I'm walking along and I see an Avengers poster out of the corner of my eye, and I see more Ruffalo looking Hulk wearing one of those time travel suits. You know, in the poster, I'm like, oh, like how do you get the? Oh,
look away. Yeah, you're like, it doesn't seem like Hulk's the type to put on clothing at all. Why would he do that? Oh, wait, Professor Hulk.
Mm-hmm. I just want to go back. One more thing that I'm going to go, Mr. Not Get It, though, about Gemini Man. Go read the Wikipedia about the development of that movie. It's amazing because you're talking about something that started 20 years ago. Harrison Ford's going to play this character. The whole history of who wrote it, how many different people got attached to the writing of it, whatever. Funny story, one of the writers in there, I have a friend that worked at an office where she found $1 million check to this guy sitting in a drawer.
Whoa.
He'd forgotten about.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was kind of like my reaction, like, you know who wrote it? I'm like, well, I'll tell you, Justin.
And you did.
Did. Whooping in movie theaters, the motions.
Any last thoughts?
I think that's...
Yeah, I thought it was going to look terrible when Ant-Man went up Thanos' butthole and expanded. it was really artfully done. I thought Ave Maria was a great soundtrack choice.
Oh, I was actually really thrilled to see Squidward back. I think he's a very credible, fun villain, and I'm glad he was a better... he was a more batter-ass guy this time.
He was
one of the thralls of Thanos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was cool in the I liked Infinity War because like
I know I wanted more of them and I was happy to get more of them.
One of the things I loved about Infinity War is like, you know, other than like mainly like dealing with like the another freaking Chitauri morons and stuff like this, you know, we hadn't like, hey, yeah, you guys are superheroes on Earth because you're special. We're gonna bring in people who are special from their planets and stuff, and you're gonna find out you're not so special.
Yeah. I don't know. Good movie. I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, do that again. Keep doing that. Wow. One universal mega corporation.
That was one thing that I did come out that it was such a finale. It was such a empty the drawer. We're doing everything. We're gonna introduce like kind of a broken idea like time travel, which will now kind of hang over every element of every other story in that universe. Going forward, that it did feel to me like, man, like it's kind of a risk in that, like, I think I'm good, like on Marvel, like,
yeah,
you know,
that's what's bringing up, like that next slate. There's nothing there that's making me go. I mean, again, we're gonna see all of them. Who are we kidding? But I'm not excited. You know, I'm not like, oh, I can't wait for blank. I'm like,
But on the other hand, for them, they're like, no, we're going to make you fall in love all over again. And we're going to wipe the slate clean a little bit so we can introduce these new elements. And, I look forward to giving them that chance because they certainly earned it over 10 years.
Yeah, I guess it's like some of the characters that they're doing sequel store stuff to characters that I'm not in love with now. You know, I'm like, oh, all right, cool. All right, that's cool.
Yeah, but they were that's been the case as they continue to bring in new characters. I was not in love with Daredevil until I started watching Daredevil, and then I was like, Daredevil's pretty great.
Or even Thor, which took
three movies.
Well, and a deliberate change of direction in character, right? That was a thing that didn't just happen, right? It was
yeah. But I see where Andrew's coming from in that, like, you know, Black Panther, although tremendously popular, was, you know, had some flaws. To me, the movie was flawed. I really still like the character. I'm excited to see that move. Another adventure.
He's boring. He's a very nice man. He's a very Andrew, nice man. That Black Panther.
Yeah, but I guess that is my larger point. And my absent public opinion about Captain Marvel. I look forward to one day having an opinion on Captain Marvel, and therefore how excited I would be to see a Captain Marvel 2.
Yeah.
Although it'd be great if in the first 15 minutes she was like, I'm out of here.
It was a great reason. Like, hey, the Earth has Avengers. Other places don't have the Avengers.
Mm-hmm. It's instant defense. It's like, I'm joyless and obsessed with how powerful I am. It's me. Never mind.
Great movie, guys.
Hey, I did watch the first episode of What We Do in the Shadows. Did you guys see that?
Oh, I haven't seen the series yet.
It's great.
No.
It's great. This is told in the first 2 minutes, but unlike the movie, they add a new type of vampire. It is an energy vampire.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this.
He's an actual vampire, but he does it just by cornering you and telling you dumb, boring stories. And so none of them want to be around. It's fun.
That's hilarious.
I think I've been that guy.
Hey, here's a gateway to hell called the Battle of Winterfell. Folks, it was the long night last night. Everybody was tired of all the talking, tired of all the table setting. Well, we finally got some action. The long-rumored, longest battle in recorded history. Took 55 days to film out there in Ireland. They were very cognizant of saying that it was going to be longer than the Helm's Deep battle of the Two Towers. What did we think?
Very dark.
It was good. Actually, I adored that about it. I think the whole conceit of being able to convey epic sweeping battles just by lights winking out, and the fact that that landed, like you felt, like I just got goosebumps remembering that moment. That was great. Bit weird that the red woman just showed up like, hey, I'm back, what's up, let's go. The constant teasing of am I about to die? Oh, I got overrun, but it's not really clear.
And then really not any significant characters dying felt like.
Okay, this is my question, because I got a back and forth with Teasdale about this today, where it's like this is like a thing where people are like, not enough main characters died.
Yeah.
Which I don't get fundamentally. I don't, that is just something that I'm not looking for. And I'm specifically not upset that we're taking possibilities of things that could happen off the table in the next 3 episodes. We still have 3 episodes to go.
I will say this. I really had the expectation that the overall story of this epic was going to be that we would increasingly realize how dumb it is to squabble over a throne in the face of an existential threat, and that the existential threat of the Night King would be the main thing. I don't know what we do for the next 3 episodes with no existential threat, and now we're back to, it feels so small to defeat Cersei.
It'll be challenging because most of the forces of Winterfell did die.
Sure, but I feel like, well, good. At least there's humans in charge. We did it. We stopped the Hanta virus from taking over the planet. It feels like all the stakes after this are much, much smaller.
I hear you, but I'm not going to worry about, well, how are they going to solve this setup until I see how they solve the setup.
Right.
Because next episode is not even going to be the bat. I don't know this, but I mean, next week they're not going to be at King's Landing. They're going to be talking about setting up all of the stakes of why Cersei cannot be in charge of the Seven Kingdoms.
Maybe, but I'm saying, like, let's not judge this by what we think they're going to do. For me personally, I'm like, I get everything you said. I'm like, yeah, but I'm like, they've always surprised me. They've always surprised and delighted me. I was in love with this episode. Like, what other people felt about Endgame is what I felt about this. Like, I was just over the moon on this thing. I was delighted every single moment. It flowed fast. I want to watch it again. And it was like, it was just, you know, for me, I was fantastic. I said, you know, if the series ended on this episode, I mean, you know, I'd be a little bit like, but I'm like, what a great capstone. What a effing great capstone to an epic series. Like, every other epic series we've seen just sort of kind of goes meh and sort of ends in a meh way. Holy cow, I loved it. I was
over the moon. But I do think there's something was weird about the darkness element, because some people, and even people that were posting like pictures and GIFs online, like you could barely see some of the scenes that I could see fairly clearly on my television. So I don't know whether or not it was some kind of setting thing that triggered some people, but like, I know for some folks, like it was like barely visible in a way that it was not on my television. So I don't know what that deal was.
Well, and some of that was like rebroadcasters of HBO were doing something to the signal on their end. So like the image that I saw was, someone had taken a frame from just the HBO Now stream and brightened it, and then took the same screen from the Foxtel over the air stream and tried to brighten it, and just what something Foxtel had done lost all of that dark information.
Huh.
And so depending on how you were seeing it, and if your TV is set up to be, you know, ultra high contrast or super, super dark than it should be, then yeah, there's a lot of that you just would not see.
I watched it sitting where you're sitting right now, Bryce, on both those monitors at once, and it was very significant, the difference. So I don't know how much of it, like I ended up with my eyes mainly on the closer one, which doesn't have as good
color
depth
range
or whatever. But it was just, you know, brighter and clearer.
Mm-hmm. That being said, it was everything that I really wanted, down to the idea that I was very much a believer that there was going to be some chicanery with the Night King, and the Night King was going to skip, you know, Winterfell and, you know, head down to King's Landing, and we were going to have a big confluence there. And then, you know, they ratcheted the stakes up and up and up and up and up and up and up. And eventually it got to the point where you're like, okay, no, someone's going to have to kill the Night King, like right now. Otherwise the show's over. And then, you know, you have the big hero moment, but this was to me everything that I would want with Game of Thrones, and that's why, like, the thing that puzzles me is the, like, no, if more main characters would have died, I would have liked it better.
But I think, like, the the past seven seasons of Game of Thrones have told me to stop expecting a happy ending or a good ending, to expect people to lose. Like, that was after we talked about last week's episode on Spoiler in Time. I walked away from that conversation going, oh yeah, they're gonna lose next week, right? And it's going to be either because Cersei against the White Walkers, or Cersei, I wasn't expecting the good guys to win. I can't keep expecting the good guys to win.
Especially when they spent not one but two episodes doing nothing but between the lines saying, enjoy them while you can. And I'm like, get it. Like, after that second episode, like, that rubber band was pulled way far back. And I was like, I am now steeled to lose everyone.
They've done that episode four times. They've done the, like, we're all going to die here episode four times.
By doing that episode we had last week, which was like, we're gonna spend some. We're like, it's gonna be our last hours this time. So it's a surprise who dies and who doesn't. And it's kind of a surprise to see, oh wow, more people survived than I thought, because we expected them to do this thing. And
who was it that was calling way in advance? I feel like it was one of you three that called way early on. Like, why are you gathering in the crypt? What? That seems like a very bad place to hide for safety when you have somebody who raises the dead.
It wasn't me. It literally, watching that moment when they start breaking, I'm like, oh, that was a bad idea. I had a friend that was like, yeah, why in the crypt? I didn't say that. I'm like, I was delightfully surprised.
Oh, that's great.
It might have been Tom.
I forget who it was, but definitely that was a moment I was waiting for.
I mean, they made a big deal over who's going to be in the crypt. And then the three important people in the crypt, none of them died either.
I'll tell you what, man. I am now full on cheering for Team Tyrianza. Like, I wanted to see them on the Iron Throne.
Especially since it's like my favorite elements of the episode before were realizing, like, oh, no, wait. Like, let's assume that there's going to be a tremendous amount of damage done, if not open rebellion and civil war. Like at the very least, considering where we are left with these characters, we now have enough of an army and enough firepower to cause problems, and yet statistically probably not enough to, like, storm King's Landing. So now the question becomes, all right, well, how do these alliances go? Because, like, even up to the point where she's, like, facing death, Sansa's like, yeah, like, I'm not on this team. Like, I like you, dog, but I don't know if I, like you, if it means giving up my Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, that's like with her, you know, we had the first episode or two episodes, everybody telling us that she's the smartest person in Westeros. We haven't seen her done anything yet, which means that we're setting her up to be the smartest person in Westeros. So, you know, she's not going to die there. You know, like, she's not going to die. Her big part of her story is the next couple episodes.
So, yes, I think they correctly hinted that, you know, kill the Night King and everything, you know, the dead stop. Did they have to represent what that looks like by exactly reenacting the end of the Phantom Menace? Like it was exactly the end of the Phantom Menace, where they blow up the spaceship and all of the Roger Roger robots just tumble down. Even though they had been giving all signs of being autonomous, semi-autonomous thinking beings up until that moment. But then they all just collapse like marionettes.
Well, we saw that happen before when they killed whichever one of the White Walkers was in charge.
Oh, one of the generals.
Yeah. We've seen that before
So I guess there's hierarchy that goes down.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I guess I can see that. Just visually, I was like, oh, this is the ending of the Phantom Menace.
Because they were definitely being controlled. I mean, think of the last scene at, you know, right in front of Bran, and the Night King's there, and all the forces have stopped instead of, like, all going after to kill the kid that they're there to capture.
Right.
There's got to be some controls elements to
that. Yeah, we saw that. But we saw that.
Because he pushes them forward from the dragon and they start falling on the flame barrier.
On the fire, yeah.
And we saw way back, like, John, whatever, when he slid, he killed one of the generals back, and then all the ones that he was controlling shattered. Mm-hmm. And so we learned that was a thing that you do. If you kill the one that made them, then you can...
Well, and also, it was in all the table setting of the episode before, you know, the biggest part of the table as they were all sitting around the thing was like, all right, we have no way of stopping this army. The only way to do it is to kill the Night King. And that's why we need to draw him out to where Bran is in the Godswood. That was like the stated plan. And Cersei goes off script.
Daenerys.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, Daenerys goes off script when she sees the Khalasar go down, because now she's like, no, now I need to provide suppressive fire instead of holding back both dragons to both attack the Night King at the same time.
The was it established why the Night King was so had such a crush on Bran?
Bran's magic. He's the connection to magic.
I understand that, but it's like
in Bran's words during that same scene, he says the Night King wants to keep the world in eternal darkness, and the Three-Eyed Raven is the world's memory. Like, so if you kill the memory, if you kill all the idea of how to rebuild and how to move forward, then he owns the world, basically.
And I think it doesn't help that Bran never finished his training, and so he clearly could do stuff, but isn't able to.
What did he accomplish by going into a bunch of ravens and flying around for a bit?
So there's some theories, but there's some interesting theories, actually, on what he is doing there, but I assume that will be something that will be explained. It didn't just enter spectator mode.
And ostensibly speaking, was he needed to find out where the, you know, how far out was the guy? What was going on? It was, you know, that his Bran's way of knowing what's the state of the battle. How much time do we have? How do we do this? So he can go out there and go see. Oh, I see him. I see where he is and whatever. And I don't, you know, we're making assumptions here that the story of the Night King and all that's completely done, that it's all over. All the evil magic in the world is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also did seem like he was able to see at least into the relatively short future to see Theon's death and possibly Arya's turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Well, and remember, the dagger has been a part of this show since the very beginning. That's mm-hmm. the dagger that Littlefinger has. That's the dagger that attacks Bran when he's first laid up in season one. It's been bouncing around this world for a very long time, with the idea being that, you know, somebody who we've already seen once go back into the past to control the future, that it's no coincidence that he's the one who hands that dagger off to Arya last season. And then we see Arya using that exact same move, sparring with Brienne, in last season as well. So it's like, that's the one thing that I love about Game of Thrones, and to me is always more of a draw than the unexpected nature, the adrenaline hit of whether or not a character I like or don't like dies, is that, like, they usually do their homework. They usually have things laid out. And there's a lot of, if I read a great justification of, like, all of the religious prophecies basically did their own little Avengers superhero team up between the Drowned God, the Lord of Light, the Seven, the Old Gods. Every one of them played a part in bringing together the Faceless Men, all worked in concert, from Theon having his moment to Bran bringing everybody into the Godswood to Arya being the one who eventually does it. This was very much in tribute to all of the prophecies and lore that we've kind of come to love with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, this in a similar vein to not spoilers here if you're worried, listeners, our discussion of Endgame. My only worry is, as we stick the landing on the HBO version of the show, I don't know that I'll finish the books. I don't know why I would finish the books.
Well, I mean, my excitement about the books has more to do with how the last one was written than it does about anything that we'll find out here. I still will enjoy George R. R. Martin's writing. I hope he goes in slightly different directions. There's obviously a lot more, balls up in the air for, the Song of Ice and Fire series than there is in Game of Thrones, but in general, I don't know. They're two different things for me.
And like, he said that they've had to cut enough stuff out of the books that it seems like you would still find enough extra stuff and ancillary stuff in those books, but I haven't read any of them, so.
Although I do suspect that the big beats will be, like, I would be shocked if Arya is not the one who kills the Night King or stops the Long Night in the books, considering they made a very big point of saying, it's been 3 years since we've known that Arya is the person who kills the Night King. And 3 years ago was the point that you know, the show was definitely lapping the books, and they apparently had their little powwow with George R. R. Martin to be like, all right, give up the big deets so we can move forward.
I like the idea that he sat down like, wow, what happens at the end is the Night King has his hands around Bran's throat, and then a soldier we'd never seen before but always been in the background, a heavyset man, lunges forward with a dagger and plunges into his heart and rips it off, and he's got a black beret cap on. Cappy's in a beard. His name, what's this guy? What's his name? Georges Martinez. Yeah.
George Martinique. Georges.
Yeah, he's an important character, by the way. You know what's funny? I'll do a backstory on him.
Until you made it.
Of House Secaucus.
Until you made that a joke about George R. R. Martin writing himself into it, like, I totally believe that that's the kind of thing he would do in the book, is make it an insignificant totally character that and not have any of that on-the-nose poetry that we love in our television.
Who knows?
I love the creeping around scene with Arya. The dead silence. You could not even hear her palms and feet on the ground. Like that was some cool Foley decision work.
I missed the connection from her out in the battlefield.
It did. It was like she teleported from being out there,
and then suddenly she was Solid Snake.
Now I'm scared.
Yeah, yeah.
They were like, now I'm badass again.
But it was cool. It was cool seeing her finally be Solid Snake and not just disappear.
There was a moment, and it was subtle, was when she's running from him because she sits down and she bashes her head. And so she's got the gash, and that's why she's disoriented. And she saw some frame points of view of her where things are sort of fuzzy for her.
Right. And then it was sort of a mirror image of the Hound, you know, being too scared to go out in the fire until he sees Arya. And then his affection overwhelms him.
Yeah. And what they did with her, it was kind of Captain Marvel. They had to weaken her. They had to make her less powerful because she's so badass. They said, we'll give her a big head injury. So now she's a little disoriented and stuff.
But meanwhile, Brian, you were dead on to point out the Foley work, because now we have a real world explanation that she is that quiet, right? And her drops of blood from her head make more sounds than her feet, right? And that plays into our big moment. Like that builds up our justification for why she's able to sneak by all the White Walkers and coming swinging like a wrecking ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there anyone? We didn't see much of. I feel like we did not see much of Brienne or Jorah or Jaime, really. I feel like it was a very Stark heavy thing by the end of that.
I feel like we saw
film.
A lot of Jorah very slowly dying.
Dying as he lived in the friend zone. You're like a brother to me.
Not Jorah, the wildling who has the hots for Brienne. I'm thinking that love triangle.
Tormund. Yeah.
And that kind of didn't really play out in a way that you really think it would have played out stronger in the battlefield.
Well, part of it is that, and if you watch the behind the scenes or they talk about the episode, one of the things they point out is they say, hey, battles are cool. Really, really long battles get boring. And, you know, in those scenes, every time you cut back to Jaime or, you know, Brianna, they're like, and it's like, okay, you know, like, and that was like, they had to say, like, if we keep, you know, we could show you more, the hour long version with them, it's just, stabbing, by the way. That's what we're doing.
But yeah, I think that's what they did very effectively. And going back to, the Two Towers sequence, what they did very effectively as well was always showing a different phase of the battle, that the battle begins out front and then there's the retreat and then there's the siege defense and then the walls are broken and you keep kind of like contracting that circle closer and closer. And this show, this episode did in my mind, a masterful job of then making it, the closer you get in to Winterfell, the more claustrophobic it is, because now there are these eerily quiet moments that you can have, and you get the Arya stuff and you get the Hound stuff. You get the little moment with Melisandre and after Beric Dondarrion dies, like there's all these other little gear shifts you can do. And then not to mention the aerial dragon kind of stuff. They were always able to kind of hit another thing. So it didn't just become hack and slash for an hour and a half.
I'd like them, there to be like a cousin Todd Stark or whatever that, like, after everything kind of goes like, hey guys, why didn't we do two rings of fire? You know, we would have saved. Shut up, Todd. You know, he's like, hey guys, you know, I was thinking about, we could have just put everybody inside of the castle first. Shut up, Todd.
And he's like, and now that I'm thinking about it, why do we just have our dragons sitting around waiting? It seems like, you know, they could be harrying and burning lots
shut
of
up,
bodies.
Todd.
Like,
oh,
okay.
Why did we let all the Dothraki and the Unsullied kind of just die for no reason?
Shut up, Todd. Well,
the Unsullied made sense, and I guess in the lore of that world, because by the way, I like went 45 minutes deep in people getting very tactician-y of like why the defense plan of Winterfell was not what it should be, and like arguing about, well, obviously the trebuchet should have been up front, and then we should have went with a 4-3-4, you know. I guess in that world, you know, they are the Dothraki screamers. They are not defensive fighters. They are offensive raiders, and that is what they do. They don't stand still on horses. They scream ahead on horses. Although I'm with you, Brian, that was like, I knew that episode was going to be dope as soon as they just did the like literal the greatest Khalasar ever assembled in history. We spent so much time talking about the whole concept of Daenerys's like military might is built on the fact that she could assemble the largest Khalasar and she got it across the sea, and now they are unstoppable. Psych.
and I loved it. You know, that moment where it was brilliant with the lights going. There are so many things they did I thought were so, you could tell they thought them through very deeply. Like the moment when those lights go out and you don't see it, like not showing them the monsters was great. And also it's like, this is a flood. This is not an army. This is just a flood coming towards you. And that was beautiful, because it was like, that was the realization of like, this is a sea of dead bodies coming at us, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was, and then the other, there were little subtleties too, like when they're in the wood and they look up and Theon sees, you could see the, like, oh, they lit the fires, because you would see the glow from the haze. And it's a great writer note. It's a great thing for a writer to realize, oh, you would see this. And it's hard on the page to think about, you know, visual, like, oh, they would know, because they would see the haze, the light come over. And a lot of great moments like that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, good. I give it a thumbs up. Yeah. You should watch it.
By the way, one of the writers, David Benioff, he's written a movie that's coming out.
Sorry. You,
well, now, Andrew, yeah, sometimes yeah, those Andrew, written no, by credits.
Very
are...
interesting. Go on.
It's going to be one of the Star Wars movies. I'm looking forward to it.
That's fascinating. More information metered out bit by bit.
All right, we got to bank another one of these.
Yeah, we do. Yep. To record some more.
All right, you guys, any picks? Awesome. Picks?
Yes, Game of Thrones and Endgame.
Yeah, everything that we do. Just...
Cool. All right, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.